This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of The Preamble. Listen, I know you're dealing with a lot, and it's even harder to do it when the world around you feels chaotic. But I'm here to help. Each week, my expert guests and I slow things down to talk about the stories shaping our world, what's really happening behind the headlines, why it matters, how it all connects. And if you're ready for real understanding and maybe even a little bit of hope, follow and listen to The Preamble wherever you get your podcasts.
This is WTIC Pet Talk. Today, Dr. Andrea Dennis from the Bloomfield Animal Hospital takes your pet health questions. Whether you have a dog, cat, or hamster, this is a show for you and your best friend. Call in now at 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. And now, Pet Talk.
Well, good afternoon. This is Dr. Andrea Dennis, and as the announcers announced, I am from the Bloomfield Animal Hospital, and it is absolutely a wonderful pleasure to be here on Saturdays. As you know, we're here from 1 to 2 o'clock, and the point of this show is to talk about your pet's health. And generally, I like to do or try to present how can we prevent diseases, and as well as guiding you once, unfortunately, our dogs or cats may have an issue, a medical issue, and the right way to go about treating them. But it's all about you. It's all about your calls. So again, just give us a call at 860-522-9842. And Tom, our producer, will answer your calls and get you in the queue. And the more questions, the better. I received many emails having to do with the show that I did a couple of weeks ago. And they were very positive. There were people that were being very helpful and suggesting some through their own experience, some of the cases that we were talking about the air, what they've been through. And some people feel more comfortable emailing and sharing that. I also, if you have that comfort level in calling in, again, we're very kind here and we really are very receptive. So that sharing, again, can be very, very helpful to all of those that are listening. Because, again, we're trying to do what is absolutely best for our pets. As we heard during the news break, you know, the University of Connecticut is now celebrating some of their full college graduations, as are other universities. And that's what springtime is all about, right? Graduations, Mother's Day, planting flowers, your annuals. And that's what spring should be, the first thought that comes to mind. In my world, it's a little bit darker because when I start seeing that green grass and the warm weather and the forsythias, you know, just sort of blooming, I think start thinking about parasites. And I know that's sad, but I think about my patients, and especially with ticks and fleas. It's a little bit early for fleas to be at their height, but it's a concern as well. But we do know that ticks for sure are a problem here in the Northeast. And one of the diseases that we have to deal with quite frequently is something called Lyme disease. And I know you've heard about it, again, because we live in Connecticut. I work in Connecticut as well. And even though this show can be heard online throughout the country, actually throughout the world, here in the Northeast, tick control and preventing tick diseases is very important. As you know, Lyme disease was named after the town of Lyme here in Connecticut. So we know what a problem it is here in the Northeast. And a couple of the other tick-borne diseases that I see in dogs in particular are called anaplasmosis, Ehrlichia. You've probably heard of Rocky Mountain spotted fever. So this is the disease itself. Our diseases themselves are things that we can try to prevent. Now, many people come to my office And when Lyme disease is discussed and Lyme vaccines are discussed, they often want to compare it to what they know about human Lyme disease. And the first lesson to be learned about Lyme disease infection is that it manifests itself completely different in man's best friend compared with the human experience. So after being bit by a tick that has transmitted the organism, which is called Borrelia, 80% of humans will actually develop a rash or flu-like symptoms. And in the next few weeks, they start to get joint pain. 15% of people will actually develop neurological abnormalities. And even 5% will start to get a heart rhythm disturbance. And, you know, at the same time in this infection, dogs, on the other hand, develop hardly 90% of dogs never show any symptoms. That's 90%. So that's one big difference. Weeks to months after infection, I would say about 60% of people will experience intermittent arthritis attacks, and 5% will get chronic neurological manifestations. In humans, Lyme disease has that potential for a serious long-term illness. When dogs become ill, it does not occur, it does not begin to manifest for at least weeks to months after infection, at which point sometimes arthritis signs are noticed. Sometimes you get a fever in dogs. Sometimes there's you'll see swollen joints, but the neurological and the heart conditions are very rare. Now, what we normally do if we suspect Lyme disease in a dog is we will do a test. We'll actually not just test for Lyme. We'll check for these other tick diseases that I was talking about. And the thing is that sometimes you have to determine whether it's an active infection of Lyme disease or not. And that's why, with tick disease, it relates to, you know, we are veterinarians, sometimes we'll actually recommend, let's just check your dog's blood for tick diseases now, even though your dog may be acting perfectly fine. That's a test that we'll do periodically. Now, what happens if your dog goes in to the office, goes into the veterinary office, is acting fine, but one of these tests they're positive for? That's one of the questions. Do you treat these patients for Lyme disease or anaplasma or Ehrlichia, whichever showed positive, or do you not? Because if I'm already telling you that 90% of dogs that come in contact with this Borrelia, which is Lyme disease, but manifest no symptoms, no signs, their own immune system seems to take care of it, do you have to treat those patients? And that's a conversation you have to have with your veterinarian. I tend to, if I have a positive Lyme, and I tend to do a second test. And then from that second test, I will determine whether I'm going to treat them. And mainly, even though they're not having a bad limp or their joints aren't hurting, there's another disease that dogs get. And this is very important. One of the most serious long-term potential problems that dogs can get is something called glomerular disease. And this is a type of kidney damage that occurs. And as you know, and we've talked about this on the air before, if there is Lyme that's affecting, or anything that's affecting the kidneys, that's pretty dangerous. It's very hard for kidneys to kind of regenerate and heal and go from a state of going into kidney failure versus non-kidney failure. And that's very hard to turn around. Versus something like liver disease, we have a lot better odds in terms of turning around any kind of liver conditions and getting them back to a normal state. So if Lyme disease, just because your dog's not limping and it doesn't have swollen joints, there's still that other area that we are concerned about. So again, going back to when you're in the office and there's a positive test, I usually will go, what's called a quant C6 is the second test, and I also ask the owners to bring in a urine sample. So if your veterinarian is asking or going along those kind of that same protocol, I'm trying to explain why we're doing it, but always feel free to ask your veterinarian, okay, if they tested positive, what do I do about that? Now, if I have a sick dog that comes in, swollen joints, never been vaccinated against Lyme, I will start that patient on an anti-inflammatory to help with their pain. And I usually start them on something called doxycycline, which is an antibiotic. And it's not a expensive antibiotic. For a time there, it was very hard to get. I remember ordering quite a large supply about 2 years ago because I was concerned that with a lot of our generic drugs come from China that we would not have access. So there was a time there where it was hard to get, but it seems like it's back in stock. Right now, it's should be very easy to get doxycycline if your veterinarian prescribes it for you. So it's a very easily treated disease. You just have to figure out, one, do they have it, and one, is it at that level that you have to treat it? And I see we're going to have a call here in just a moment, and I'm probably going to have to take them after the break, but we'll do that. But for some right now, so that's all about that Lyme disease portion of things. Vaccinating. When you go, and especially those of you that are bringing in these newly adopted dogs and adorable puppies, there must be a conversation about vaccinating. I don't consider that the core vaccine, like rabies and distemper, but I often recommend it because of where we live here in Connecticut, because of the Northeast. And I have seen a huge difference with those dogs that are vaccinated against it. I don't believe in over-vaccinating. I'm not telling you have to vaccinate your dog for Lyme disease, but at least have that conversation with your veterinarian, especially if you're going to go for hikes, especially if you're going to go, especially down by the shore. You know, I will go down to the beach and I see that tall grass. I'm sure it has a name, but I'm not the botanist, but that tall grass. And I'm always looking for ticks. I'm looking for those little black specks there that possibly is a tick that, you know, could transmit any kind of disease to us, or even if I'm bringing my dog there as well. So that's kind of the mindset about Lyme. I think it's probably going to be a good break before I take Joe. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about Lyme disease, springtime issues, and we'll have more pet talk.
That ain't what I want, 'cause I like to see you out in the moonlight. I'd like to kiss you way back in the sticks. I'd like to walk you through a field of wildflowers, and I'd like to check you for ticks.
If you didn't figure it out, we're talking about ticks today on this beautiful Saturday afternoon. That is the mindset of a veterinarian during springtime. I'm Dr. Andrea Dennis, and it's a pleasure to be here today. And I welcome you to call in and share some of your comments about your pets, about some of the experiences you've been through. If you just have a question, no matter how small, no matter how, you know, maybe silly you think it is, or something you think as a pet owner you should know. There are so many new pet owners right now. Believe me, this is a process. I've been doing this for multiple years and I'm still learning things. So that's what we're here for, to answer those questions so you do the right things. I always tell you that you have to be your pet's best advocate. I'm from the Bloomfield Animal Hospital. That's where I work. But have been here for many, many years just being here on the radio and have enjoyed it. And that's why I continue to come back, and we share time during this slot with Lori Fass, who is the pet trainer, and she also answers some of your training questions. So speaking of advocates, I think we've got probably one of the best pet advocates that's up next, and that's Joe. How are you doing today, Joe?
Not bad. How are you?
I'm good. I also didn't talk about the Kentucky Derby, but that's another thing I look forward to in May.
My favorite half of my dog.
Okay.
They picked up that he had Lyme disease in an examination. So he's, you know, there's no symptoms.
Right.
So I guess there's a test you guys do.
Yeah.
And my vet, you don't have to worry, she's retired now, but she says the number was 98. I usually don't treat until it's 100.
Okay.
And I says, okay, and I think I suggest, so let me take him back here in a month or two.
Yeah.
And I went back there, it was 110.
Right.
And she still didn't want to treat.
Okay.
Now, mind you, where I take my dog in the summer swimming,
yeah.
1 year a guy had a golden retriever. It was like a 1 year old. I came there the next year. He says, this is not the same dog. My other dog got Lyme disease, and it went to, I guess, his liver, I guess, or yeah. kidneys, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. And the dog died.
Oh, no.
So my vet still, I says, no, give him the doxycycline, right?
Right.
So she gave him doxycycline, and then they had to take him off it because he got some other thing. They had to put him on antibiotic. And then I came back. I says to the tech, now give me the rest of the prescription.
Right.
And you still want to do it? Yes. So I did it, and I guess you have to wait 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And they tested them again. It was like 30.
Right.
I guess you don't worry about it.
Right.
My thing is, you know, I know it's antibiotic resistance, but it's why take the chance?
Yeah. Okay. So when you had to go off the doxycycline, did your dog get upset stomach or sick?
No, he had to go off it because we had to put him on another antibiotic for something. He had a skin thing, whatever
okay.
it was.
Okay.
But I'm saying when I told her, I said, now give me back the doxycycline.
Right.
And she said, they came at you really? Yeah, I really want it. And then
right.
I wasn't going to take the chance. I mean, interesting thing. His breeder got Lyme disease, and basically they didn't catch it early, and it did a number on her.
Oh, yeah. I know a veterinarian that caught it, and the neurological symptoms were just horrific. Let me answer the question, which I think that you're asking, is that
why take the chance?
Why take the chance? I think I have some dogs with doxycycline. I don't know if you've ever taken it as a human, but it is rough on the GI system.
I was just talking to someone. They mentioned it. What the number did on his dog.
Oh, my gosh.
Her dog.
Yeah, and so that's why I'm saying if I see a test that's positive, even if it's for anaplasma or some of the other tick-borne diseases, I do that other test. And again, if that test is running about 30 or 50, that second test is called a Quant C6, and the dog is not showing any symptoms, then I also remember I want to see that urine sample because it's the kidneys that get infected in dogs. So if it's a normal urine sample and we're still pretty low, I will talk to the owner about the odds of and the recommendations. And then if the owner says, well, I'm still really worried what you saw, if there's anything in the kidneys, I would like to at least do the doxycycline. I'm comfortable with doing that, but I want to make sure there's I've got enough facts to be able to help that owner make the right decision. But doxycycline, just because it's an antibiotic, is not harmless. And that's what our worry is, okay? We have to talk about, you know, not just using antibiotics whenever and worried about antibiotic resistance. That is another conversation. But I want to do no harm with my patient. And that's why I just don't say every dog that's positive on that test, I'm just going to put on doxycycline for 30 days.
Well, I got concerned when it was like 98, and she says her cutoff point's 100, and then it goes up with 110 in a month or two. And it's just like,
right. No,
you know, give it to him. Now, let me ask you something. I'm not sure if I did this when I put him on doxycycline. I think I did. The probiotics, does that seem to help the stomach?
It does, yes. But they have now what they call pro and pre-antibiotics. That's what I would use. I'm sorry, pro and prebiotics. I think those are what I would recommend doing just versus the probiotic for stomach. But that does help. The other thing that helps is making sure that it's usually it's a tablet and making sure it's given with food. And then I actually like to put it in a meatball so that there's food coating it. I never put it on an empty stomach. Cats?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing. I got protecting my other dog. I got bit by a dog once.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the doctor, and I don't know what I was taking. It was doxycycline and everything. I remember that. One time it wasn't pleasant, your stomach and everything.
Yeah.
At the time, though, I don't think I was taking any probiotics. I don't think I was even taking a yogurt or anything.
Right.
But, I know now.
Yes, and that can be helpful. But there's another thing. There's something called esophageal strictures, too, especially when it's given in cats. And that is where it will cause such an irritation. If that pill does not go all the way down to the stomach and somehow it's caught in the esophagus, which obviously is the tube that brings the food to the stomach, it can cause these strictures. So by strictures, I mean, really, it's like you're squeezing the esophagus to the point that it's not as open and as patent as it should be. And in particular, cats, it's a problem. So that's why it's an antibiotic we all talk about, but it has a lot of potential damage. But we have dogs. I have a lot of my patients on it because, again, I have another dog this week that I actually diagnosed with heartworm disease, a new dog today, only 10 months old from the South.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just devastating. And so, but that dog's going to have to go on doxycycline with the treatment. So I'm okay using it, but let's just make sure there's a real reason to do it.
If the number went down like a month or two, I would say no. But when that number went up 110, I would,
Right.
And it, risk versus benefit.
Right.
I wasn't going to risk his life because, you know, I'll deal with the upset stomach cleaning up if it came to that, as opposed
right.
to, you know, and then, like I said, when the number got down to 30, it's just basically that means nothing, you know, you're okay, right?
Yeah, and that's where I'd like it. So I'm just going to ask you, did you have a urine sample checked at all during that time?
I'm trying to think.
Okay.
I forget.
I bet it was
a few years ago.
Yeah. I bet if she was monitoring the levels of the Quant C6, I'm sure her urine was done as well, because that's when you look for protein in the urine. Any sign of kidney glomerulonephritis, and that can be really, that's the problem that we don't see so much in people, but definitely in dogs, and that's why we want to see.
Well, that's the beauty of the yearly wellness examination.
You got it.
No symptoms at all. He's a nut. I mean, he's a visual. He's a
right.
nutcase. He's still, I mean, we're averaging 10 miles a day this year, right? Him more. I say, let him loose. He's a nutcase. He just, you know, he comes back. But at the time, he was like that, and no symptoms at all, but he had mine.
Oh, God. Well, and again, you knew what the exposure was, but the fact that you mentioned that he's a Visla, and I'm going to have to go in about 30 seconds here, but I am going to start a new segment here on the show. I'm going to talk about a breed. We're going to do a new breed every time we come on the air, and I'm going to have to reach out to you so you can tell. We're going to talk about different ones. We'll have to talk about the Visla when it's...
Sure. I mean, I tell people, great dog, but if you're not going to exercise, just forget it.
I know you'll have lots of good advice, Joe,
all
for
right,
sure.
All right, I'll tell them too. All right, very good, doctor. Take care.
You too. Thank you very much.
Stay away from those ticks yourself, too.
I will, for sure.
Bye now. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye-bye, Joe. Appreciate you, too. He's got a wealth of information, Joe does. And, you know, again, he is a caring advocate for his pets, and his knowledge, he's right on the money. And again, I just extrapolate a little bit more, pull a little bit more information out so that we can give you from the medical side to why we do things. And it's a good lesson to be had. So yeah, we're going to come back after the news. There's a lot more pet talk right here on WTIC News Talk 1080. It is Saturday, and it's actually the Running of the Roses today, too, at the Kentucky Derby. I've never been to the Kentucky Derby, and sometimes I'm torn. I mean, those creatures are so absolutely beautiful. But then, you know, you just wonder, make sure they're being treated the right way. And Actually, this is Dr. Andrea Dennis from the Bloomfield Animal Hospital. So I'm talking as a veterinarian. I'm here on Saturdays. Love to hear from you. So if you do have any calls, please, or not calls, but just questions, give us a call at 860-522-9842. Would love to talk with you about anything. I started the show talking about ticks, and I have a few things I want to resolve with that. But you can call about absolutely anything, and we'd appreciate it. But talking today about the Running of the Roses in the Kentucky Derby, a lot of people don't know this, but I actually did a residency in large animal medicine at UC Davis in California, and worked with some of the most incredible equine individuals, a lot of them on the racehorses, spent a lot of time, spent like a couple of weeks just at a foaling farm where a lot of these very expensive racehorses, they would actually be born at this farm that I worked at in Santa Barbara as part of my residency. And it's a whole different world. I mean, some of you are aware of how much that goes involved in breeding, artificial insemination. It's just absolutely amazing. And the amount of care that these individuals get while they're being raised and while they're being trained, you know, somewhere though along the lines, you know, sometimes there are people that are not thinking in terms of what's best for the animal, for the horse sometimes. And so that's the part that kind of bothers me. So I love watching it, but at the same time, I'm somewhat torn, and I'm sure some of you feel the same way. But so, as you know, veterinarians have to know all species, and you can't be good at everything. And that's why I've really concentrated the last couple of decades just with small animals and working primarily with dogs and cats. So that's why we do most of the talking about that. But until we get a couple more calls in, I'm going to just kind of finish up to about this Lyme disease aspect. And that is that, you know, the Lyme disease is actually transmitted by the deer tick. And that's called Ixodes scapularis. And just so you know, and I'm not going to get into the whole life cycle because I will absolutely bore you. There is no doubt about it. But I want you to just think about this number. The female tick lays a clump of approximately 2,000 eggs each spring. That's 2,000 eggs, and that is totally gross. And then the small six-legged larva hatches out of these little eggs, and that attaches to a host as soon as it can. And that host usually is the white-footed mouse. And if that mouse is actually carrying the Lyme disease organism, which is called Borrelia, it's a spirochete, the larva can get affected at this point. And then just like any life cycle with parasites, you usually start off with eggs, that goes then to a stage of larva, and then that matures to the nymph stage and then to adults. But again, I can talk about the life cycle of this tick for about 2 days, and I'm not going to do that. But just keep in mind. So again, what can we do? Are we just kind of stuck? Do we have to live with this? And that's where I really want you to talk with your veterinarians about the best preventative for your pets. What's best that you can actually put on them if they're going outdoors? And I have a couple of comments about cats as well. But those dogs that are going down to the shore, although they're just going in the woods, they have to live with these ticks. And just so you know, that tick needs to be attached to your dog. If this tick is carrying this Lyme disease, it needs a minimum of 48 hours to transmit that organism into your dog. So even though some of these products that are available that do a great job with ticks, sometimes you might see that tick attached, but it's going to die, and it's going to definitely not be able to transmit that disease into your dog. So talk to your veterinarian. Do you like the sprays? Do you like the collars? Do you want the NexGard, the different kind of oral medications, the topicals? There are choices to be made. I just want you to try to do and pick the best choice. And I know some of you were like, well, this is a pesticide, and I don't want to put anything like that near my pet. That is your decision and that's your choice, but at least try to make it as informed a decision as possible. So that's talking about how many ticks can one little eggs can be laid. And then people say, well, what about my cat? Fortunately for me, my cat is indoors. I think from when I first started in veterinary medicine, a lot of cats were going outside. I have seen that trend change tremendously. So the majority of cats that I see are indoor cats. They do not go out. But some people bring them out on a leash. Some people, when we were talking about, you know, how dangerous lilies are to cats, some people do still let their cats out. They can pick up ticks. There was one case that I had about 6 years ago, outdoor cat. The owner thought that it had tumors on its eyelids. It was a white cat. And she brought him in because she thought that these tumors were occurring on her cat's eyelids. And when I looked at this cat's eyelids, there were about 30 ticks, deer ticks, just attached to the eyelid. They weren't tumors. They were ticks. And, you know, once I get grossed out by this, but I had to kind of compose myself. And then we sedated the cat, and we were able to get rid of all these ticks. But so obviously this cat was hunting or just kind of burrowed itself somewhere and ended up going into a place where one of these female ticks just laid 2,000 eggs. So, you know, again, that's how it can be transmitted, how cats can get this. So they can sometimes get stiff and swollen joints. Cats can. Sometimes you'll also see they'll get very lethargic. They won't want to eat. But I must say that it's rare. We don't see it nearly as often as we do in dogs. They're highly resistant. They get the bacteria. The bacteria can be transmitted if they're not on any preventative, but they have this high resistance. I don't think we quite understand how cats can fight it off better than dogs, but they do. And but they have other diseases. You know, we see Haemobartonella that's transmitted by a tick for cats. That can be life-threatening. It causes an anemia for them. So when you have an outside cat, you should also, and even indoors too, because we worry about heartworm disease as well, but they should be on a preventative, especially during this time of year. So I'm just going to recommend that as well. And as I said, even if your cat does have this, this doxycycline, as which is the main treatment right now for tick disease, we just have to be really, really careful with cats and making sure if it's given in a pill form that they swallow that pill, because they're very, very sensitive, like I said, to esophageal strictures when I was talking with Joe earlier. So that's kind of my summary on ticks. And since I, you know what? My thing went dead again. I'm so sorry. I have a couple of calls here, and I do apologize. I'm usually on top of this, but my screen just went black. So, Jim, I'm gonna, I'm just gonna bring you up right away, and then hang in there with me. Okay, how are you? All right, yeah. I guess we have to, the board's a little bit different. Well, do I trust this person that's calling now then? Hello, this is Dr. Dennis. All right, this is, I think this is going to work this time. Can I help you?
Hello?
Hi, it's Dr. Dennis. How can I help you?
Hi, doctor. How are you?
Good. I'm great today.
First time caller, so I'm nervous.
Oh, do not be nervous.
Hey, this is Detective Strange Man out of Danbury, Connecticut.
Do I know you?
You have a great show.
Thank you.
Listen, I emailed your office, but you didn't respond. But listen, I have a question on neutered and spading and pets.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, it happens at a young age and it's quite traumatic to them. And the other question is, I'm sponsoring a pet overseas, and I'm thinking about international adoption. But the big thing is neutered and spading and pets. And I'm talking restrictions. So I will hang up and listen to your response off the air. You have a great show.
I appreciate it.
And you have great studio people. God bless. And listen, if you're a mom, happy Mother's Day ahead of time.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I am. I appreciate the sentiment. Thank you for your kind words. Okay. He said he was going to hang up, and he did. So, Joe, I hopefully you got that compliment, too. And I'm sorry, I think I hung up on the previous caller. So please call back. I promise I'll get you on the air. Please call back. Again, my screen had just gone dead there for a little bit. But the it's an excellent question that the detective brought forward, and that is this whole neutering and spaying early. So neutering is a castration, and the spaying is ovarial hysterectomy that's generally done. And there was a trend there, I would say, about 15 years ago that started about when we had all these unwanted dogs and cats on the street, and they were being, looks like we got our call back. Good. And so that it looks like that, you know, so the trend was we didn't want these unneutered pets out on the street. So they were being spayed and neutered young. I mean, sometimes 8 weeks old, sometimes 3 months old. Then, you know, whereas typically we were kind of recommending 6 to 8 months. So that's the past. The trend now, and this is through some recent research that has occurred, and it was primarily with golden retrievers. And again, we can talk about this, I think I should, at a full show at some point, but there's, because of this study, we are leaning towards larger dogs, Labrador retrievers, golden retrievers. We're leaning towards other dogs, the bigger dogs, to wait until they at least have one heat cycle. That's, and there's some people, there's a group of veterinarians that believe very strongly that's the way it should be done, and others that can go either way. But we do know that I'm not recommending that early age neutering and spaying either. I think there should be some maturity. I think we want some of those hormones developing in their system. And again, any golden retriever, all those golden doodles, labradoodles that we're seeing a lot of, I'm really recommending to wait at least to that after that first heat. Now, the small dogs, you know, some people say, well, I don't want to wait. And it's, you know, she's a 10-pound chihuahua. Why do I have to wait? And I said, well, I will kind of give them. They don't want to go through that heat cycle. It can be pretty messy. They have another dog. Maybe they have an unneutered male that they don't want to neuter. So there's different situations. I am not hard and fast that I have the final say on every treatment. I think spaying and neutering is somewhat of a personal decision. I have some people that never do it. And the timing, I can guide you with the research, and then you make your right decision with your veterinarian. So hopefully that will help just a little bit. So I think with that being said, I think I will. Promised. Ah, I think I got you, Jim.
Hi.
Thanks for calling back. I felt so bad if I hung up on you, but how can I help you today?
Well, I had a question and a comment on fix, but also a question on spaying my puppy.
Go.
So
you're all set. Go ahead.
I was told, I don't know if it's true or not, but Lyme disease really isn't active from November 1st to roughly May 1st or okay. April 1st.
Right.
And I didn't know if that was true or not. I know there's a lot of other diseases out there on other ticks that are.
Right.
And I just didn't know about the Lyme disease part.
Right. And that's generally, I wouldn't say May, but that's you're it's at a much lower pace because, again, the nymphs do come out. I'm sorry, the larvae do come out in the spring, and they do the first feeding. And then they kind of like are subdued and kind of quiet and quiescent for about 6 months during the winter. But then you can have then you have the nymphs that can be coming out at different times. And sometimes you have the adults, and the adults can also transmit too. But I would agree that the least active phase or time of transmitting Lyme disease is from November to, I would say, April, early April.
All right.
But it can happen.
Because I live out West Sloughfield. I have a lab puppy.
Uh-huh.
She likes to walk in the fields.
Yes.
And we got blackleg ticks. We've got dog ticks. We got ticks galore.
Do you use a preventative, Jim, or you don't believe in it?
Yeah, she's on NexGard, and she has been since she's about, 8 weeks old.
Good, good.
The guy who bred her is a big bird dog guy, and she's going to be a bird dog, so
nice.
It was important. And the other thing I was going to say,
about spaying?
Just because you put it on your dog and the dog's safe doesn't stop the dog from bringing it in.
Right.
Which is why I've told my wife we don't want the dog in the bed with us.
Oh, God. Yes.
And my wife listens about as well as the dog. So.
Well, then what you want to do with Jim, you just do that tick check. If you're not winning in that fight, then do your tick check before that dog hops in your bed.
That's great. Except I explained to my wife that the ones we've got to worry about are the really small ones.
Yes, yes.
And she's missed a couple. So I was fortunate. I called my doctor. He gave me the prescription, go to CVS, 2 doxycycline tablets, and you're done.
Good.
But I got a couple bites. But the other question I had about my dog, she's 8 months old now. She's a black lab.
Mm-hmm.
Different people are giving me different advice on when she should be spayed.
Right, right. And so, and I don't know if you were listening to the caller just before I hung up on you, but I do apologize for that. That was on me. But the Labrador Retriever, my opinion would be I would put your lab, her in that category to wait that one heat cycle. And the reason is because that's the general feeling. She's not a small little dog. We talked about this study with golden retrievers that has been going on for years and years. And that's what the strong recommendation is in terms of reducing arthritis, reducing cancer, healthier pets, that's what they're seeing.
And that's what my wife keeps on, hearing advice from other people.
Right. And then people will read about it online too. And I, going through a heat, especially with a dog, I'm sure, what is she, 60 pounds now, 50 pounds?
65.
Yeah. It's not always pleasant, but and the other side of this though, is the fact that we do know if we allow them to have too many heat cycles, the chance of having mammary cancer or breast cancer is high too. So I go kind of in the middle with that, let them have one first heat and then spay them. That's my opinion. Okay.
Right.
I got some music playing. Do you want to hold and I'll finish talking to you after the break?
Yeah, it'd be great. Fun.
Okay, hold on then, Jim. And I'm here, my little subtle message that we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Pet Talk.
To all of the queens who are fighting alone, baby, you're not dancing on your own.
Can't live without me,
minutes of Pet Talk. Actually, the last 5 minutes. Boy, did this hour go by fast. I'm Dr. Andrea Dennis from the Bloomfield Animal Hospital, and I want to thank Justin Levine for providing the music. And just to make sure I do not forget my producer, Joe, either by the end of the show, because sometimes I'm rushing at the end of the show. Joe, thank you for everything. So, again, I, as promised, I wanted to just allow Jim a couple more minutes, Jim, okay? I didn't want to leave you hanging because you were so good to call back.
No problem. I did have one other question for
you. Sure.
Out here in our wanders, lately, my dog has found a couple of dead birds, okay. Which I'm attributing to bird flu, I guess.
Yeah.
They say it's coming around.
Right.
My wife is very worried that she can get bird flu from the dead birds. I'm not sure that's possible. I'm more worried about her eating the bird and getting bones stuck in her.
Yeah.
But she's pretty good about just bringing them back and wanting me to throw them.
Right. You know, and I think the avian influenza is something that I think we should be somewhat concerned about. We know that it's coming around. I personally think that the DEP, I would probably, I don't know if they're testing any of these birds, but the DEEP would be some place that I would contact and see if they would at all be, you know, want to see any of these specimens. We have not had any evidence of it transferring from bird to dog. But again, if we're still dealing with like an H1N1, just like we've been through with COVID, we always worry about the jumping from one species of animals to another. So I am with your wife. Let's not have her come in contact. Let's grab these birds, hopefully before she does.
It's tough because she can find them.
I know. And
labs
again,
are really good about finding birds.
It sounds like she's good at what she does. And I think I would not lose any sleep over it. But if we can avoid it, then let's do it. Because again, like I said, I'm not having read, and I keep up with as much of this as I possibly can. Have not heard of this happening. But again, we've seen the canine influenza that came from equine. Hear about the dog flu. So we see that species jumping more than we like, but don't lose any sleep over it. Do what you can. But I would contact the DEEP. I would contact that number. They can be very, very helpful. Okay.
All right, we'll do.
All right, that sounds really great.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You have a good one as well. Bye-bye. Sounds like a gorgeous lab. We got to see a picture one of these times. I just want to pay homage. And Dave, if I don't get to you, I will definitely answer your question off the air because I don't have to rush and do anything this afternoon. But I just wanted to highlight the breed of the month here before I let anyone go. And that is the Great Dane. And the reason why this came to mind, you may have heard that the 2-year-old Zeus from Bedford, Texas has now been the Guinness World Record tallest dog. And it usually is a Great Dane, but we now have one right here in the United States. And from Texas, he's been determined the tallest dog in the world. He's 3 feet, 5 inches. Now he has not, there has been another Zeus in the past. That was a previous Guinness Book World holder. He was 3 feet, 10 inches, but that's a tall dog. And if you were wondering, well, how much does Zeus eat? Zeus eats about 12 cups of food a day. And I want to say that if you're thinking about getting a Great Dane, just some of the, they are wonderful, wonderful pets. They're calm. They do need some exercise. You're not going to run this dog. So if you just want sort of a calm, large dog, the Great Dane is a wonderful specimen. But I also would have you do your research because they are prone to quite a few health concerns. They do tend to have a shorter lifespan than other dogs. And that's something that, you know, you probably have heard about, that large dogs, sometimes 7 years old is a full life, but the average is 7 to 10. They tend to have that problem with what we call gastric torsion, where the stomach can twist on itself and it could be potentially fatal. But there are procedures, some surgical, something called a gastropexy that can be done. But they are not a cheap dog to have. They're not cheap to feed. They're not cheap to give medicine to. And like I said, talk about some of the few health problems that they can have before you decide to buy a Great Dane or adopt a Great Dane. But we're honoring Zeus, the tallest dog in the world, with the Great Dane breed. Okay, so you know what? I did have one more call, but Dave, what I'm going to do is put you on hold. And with that, I'll get to you off the air. I was having a good time answering questions and time got a little bit away from me, but I will be back in 2 weeks. Lori Foss will be back next week. And again, Joe, thank you very much for all your help. But we're going to have to say see you next time.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of The Preamble. Listen, I know you're dealing with a lot, and it's even harder to do it when the world around you feels chaotic. But I'm here to help. Each week, my expert guests and I slow things down to talk about the stories shaping our world, what's really happening behind the headlines, why it matters, how it all connects. And if you're ready for real understanding and maybe even a little bit of hope, follow and listen to The Preamble wherever you get your podcasts.